You're listening to the Petapixel Podcast. Catch new episodes every week on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Petapixel Podcast. It's your buddy, Jordan Drake, and I got other buddies here. Look, it's Chris Nichols.
Hi.
Or listen if you're just listening. And you can also listen to my friend, Jaron Schneider. How you doing, Jaron?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm bringing all the energy today.
I just recovered from a bout of COVID. So, like, I mean, my energy is on its way back up. Yeah.
Oh.
In between the last podcast and this one, I went through the whole cycle and I'm feeling better.
It's okay. It was the 10th time. He's fine.
It was the second time. And if I'm coughing, I apologize in advance because it's still a little bit of lingering, but I'm
What's your COVID ranking this time? Because I would say like...
It was like a head cold. It was weak.
Okay. So like a 2 out of 10 kind of deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
I laugh at COVID now.
Well, I'm glad you're doing better. So I always like to kick things off with a question for both of you, you know, just to let everybody know us a little bit
better. He'll eventually run out, Chris. Eventually he will run out of things to ask.
I don't know. He'll go forever.
He has a superpower.
So I actually have two questions this week. First question is, what is your spouse's pet name for you? And question two, can I call you that for the duration of the episode? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jaron. What does your wife call you?
Jer.
I can do Jer. Okay. I was hoping for something, you know, a little more cuddly and affectionate.
Schnookums baby? Like, no.
Yes, that's exactly what I was. That would be a revelation for me.
We don't really do the pet names thing. In fact, my wife hates it, like hearing anyone call someone else baby. She hates it. She's like, cringes. So I'm not even.
What? I call your wife baby all the time.
No, you don't. Don't say things like that. People will believe you, as I said last week. But yeah, no, it's just Jer.
Chris?
Oh. That's funny. We don't do honey or anything like that, but my wife does call me babe or baby. Your wife would hate it.
Okay, perfect. So are you cool with me calling you babe or baby for the duration?
I mean, you've called me so much worse. I'm fine with calling you baby. Yeah. What does your wife call you?
You already know this, so I'm just going to let you take the lead on this.
Well, tell the world, Jordan. Tell the entire world.
She does sometimes call me Jordy Boo.
Jordy Boo, yes. Oh, yes. I have heard Chris call you that.
I called. So that answers your second question. I mean, whether you give me permission or not, I call you Jordy Boo all the time.
Okay, I decline to give you permission for this particular
podcast. Or Jord. She calls you Jord, and I call you Jord. Or Jordy Bear, and I call you Jordy Bear, too, once in a while. She calls you Jordy Bear more often. I know a lot about your guys' relationship. That's strange.
You do.
You've known us for a shockingly long time.
Long time. Hmm. But yes, Jordy Boo's my personal favorite. I will continue to use
it. I tend to be quite formal when I say people's names. Like, my wife's name is Andy, but it's actually Andrea. Nobody calls her Andrea except me. Like, I say everyone's name, like, in full whenever possible. Like,
not just when you're mad at them?
No, just in general. I have a friend who goes by, like, his name's Pat, but I always call him Patrick. Like, always.
Do you call me Christopher?
I should. I think
when he's stern and you're not around, Chris, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, sorry, babe. Yes. Okay. So we got a huge news week that has happened. So we're really going to focus on those stories today. I mean, the absolute headline that we want to really get into is Nikon has bought Red. And I have a lot of thoughts, and I'm sure there's plenty for us to discuss. Yes, exactly. They now own
it. They bought an entire color.
I just realized it's
officially
going to
be a rainbow war.
If you want to make orange, you've got to license it from Nikon. You've already got access to yellow.
We should have, we didn't think about this. I should have done yellow in my background. And that way, Chris would be the red, and then
For those that are watching, I'm trying to be true to the nature of our news
story. Even your shirt
today
is on theme. Yeah. Well done.
Yes. And my burning passion for both of you.
I don't think I can listen to you call him babe. It's.
Why don't we just quickly intro this podcast as a palate cleanser, and we'll get into it.
Yeah. Don't be like that, baby.
Oh, man. All right. Well, now that that is probably not behind us, but I'm going to keep moving forward. I'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, OM System. Join OM System for Lens Fest. Now, through March 31st, you'll find incredible discounts on nearly all M. Zuiko Pro lenses that are now $200 off. Plus, unlock savings of up to $400 on most non-Pro M. Zuiko lenses, along with exclusive camera and lens bundle deals. Out of curiosity, for each of you, what is your favorite OM System Pro lens?
Oh,
and what is
I
your
had this
favorite?
Cute, I was teed up to ask you guys the same question. Mine's easy. 8-25 f/4. That lens rules. Ultra wide to normal range. It's got a focus clutch on it. It barely breathes at all. And it's a wonderfully sharp photography lens. That lens slaps and rules, and everyone should have one.
Man, yes. you're very violent with your lenses. They're always
slaps.
Being tyrannical and abusive.
Rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. They slap in their killer lenses. Yeah.
My favorite, probably you guys already know, it's the Olympus 12-100 f/4 Pro. I love that lens. It's rugged for outdoor use, very versatile, optically actually really nice. The only thing I would say is it doesn't focus super close, but I love it for like on river video work, and it's just a great walk around travel lens.
All right, what
it's
about
funny,
your favorite?
Big F4 emphasis here today that's going to roll back later in the episode.
Oh, what about your favorite non-pro lens? Your favorite, just your standard OM System lens. M. Zuiko, I should say. It's a lot of branding stuff with OM.
So. You know, I mean, the 12 mil, it was always a sexy little lens. You know, they're old school 12 mil. Yeah. And beautiful. Like, I liked it when you could get, I mean, that's, you know, that's, we're talking Olympus days, but it's, you could get in silver body, really nice metal construction. That was a beautiful little walk around lens.
Okay, so let me just check this. I have it right beside me here. The 75mm 1.8, one of my favorite lenses, is not a Pro Series lens. So that would definitely qualify.
There you go. Just like the 12mm. Yeah. Same like kind of generation. Same kind of series.
If you're looking to do like candid photography and something, 150mm equivalent, keep your distance, but really bright and just lovely fall off on it. This lens is wonderful.
Well.
It slaps and burns and fights.
And rages and
aggressive.
Owns.
Yes. It owns hard.
Well, OM System's renowned legacy and cutting-edge optics shines through with the line of compact, lightweight lenses delivering impeccable image quality. Designed for adventure and many built to withstand any environment, the M. Zuiko Pro Series of lenses are not only durable, but also weather-sealed for peace of mind in every shooting scenario. Don't miss out on Lens Fest. Upgrade your gear during one of the biggest lens sales of the year. For more information, visit explore.omsystem.com/petapixel. Thanks again to OM System for sponsoring the Petapixel podcast.
Thank you.
So I want to bring something up here. So, I mean, we've heard now Nikon is buying red, the color red, and the Nikon's color has always been yellow, right? But they always like rocked the red stripe. So, I mean, that makes sense. But Olympus used to own blue, but OM System, have you guys noticed they don't have a color anymore? Do they like...
Well, the lenses, the Zuiko lenses still have the blue ring.
Do they sell the blue ring? Like that's so that's Olympus / OM System's color. What
but
does
they
Canon
tend, they
do?
Tend to be like leaning more into like the blacks now because I've got some like business cards from them.
Yeah. Canon that's does what I the mean. Red, which is why they were in cahoots with red before and shared a lens mount.
Yeah, but Canon's not like, does Canon have to change the color of their logos now? I don't know. Sony's orange, right? Like everybody seems to have their color that they
Fuji's
like.
Fuji's green. Yeah.
Fuji's green. Yeah. So.
Well, Fuji uses red a lot, actually.
Like that's
the,
true too.
The little like the red eye in Fujifilm.
Right.
So,
right. But green is their color.
I think it's their broadcast series that tends to use the Fujinon lenses.
Like, yeah.
Right. Use green. Well,
like their film
more.
Packs are always green, right? Like that's their analog stuff. So I don't know. Like, yeah, Olympus, I feel like the OM System now, they've kind of let go of the blue. You don't see it very often now anymore. So
they should embrace that blue. I like the blue.
Everybody's got to jump on a color now. I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know what before we get to discussing the primary colors that are purchased by Nikon, let's first go through some of the other stuff that happened this weekend. We're going to start with the one that really broke this week. And I'm going to preface this with, this is not a story that is like, should be on the cover of People magazine or whatever. This is actually like, if you're going to skip this, I really hope that you don't, because there's a discussion around this that I want to get to. It's just you can get really derailed by the subject matter very quickly.
Yes,
because people just don't, they tend to not care. But yesterday, so on Monday, we record this podcast on Tuesdays, Kate Middleton, a photo that she had shared with media. So she had sent this through The Wire, that is to say through official channels to like AP and Reuters and the BBC and whatnot, was found to have been digitally manipulated in some way, which is not allowed per those publications rules.
Yes.
And the AP had to send out a kill order to remove it from circulation, which is extremely rare. Mm-hmm. And so CNN is now saying that they looked at this and are now reviewing every other handout photo they've received from them from Kensington Palace, which is like their, you know, whatever, what they use as their PR.
Their PR firm, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, this is a bigger deal than I think people realize, because the idea that photos can be manipulated and that it aren't necessarily inherently true isn't something that enthusiasts, like photography enthusiasts, have questioned. We've all known that. And like the whole idea behind content authenticity, that whole conversation has been going on now for a couple of years. But the average person doesn't really think about it that much.
Yeah.
They think about it now. A lot of people, like our editor, Matt Grokut's mother-in-law, is just incensed. Like, she feels lied to. And I think that this is a major turning point in that discussion. Thoughts, gentlemen?
This is an interesting discussion. Sorry, because your normal reaction when you see the photo, I mean, just to give context, if you haven't seen it, it's Kate Middleton with her kids. It's a nice, like, very standard sort of family portrait, well-produced, nice light, right? And I think Kate Middleton fancies herself a bit of an amateur photographer and an enthusiast as well. And I mean, so it's a nice photo. And there's nothing, you know, we're not talking about anything that's going to change political, you know, situations or put anybody in trouble or be taken out of context or anything like that. But I think most people, when they look at a photo like this, they're like, well, what's the big deal? It's a family shot. Like, why can't Kate edit it? Why can't she change it? Like, who cares?
That seems to be a purveying comment on Petapixels. Like, why do we care? It's just a photo of her family. Yeah. Leave her alone.
Exactly. And you know what? And I'm going to say this 100%. That's not an invalid statement to make. Okay. Like, yes, we have to consider the context that it is a family photo. If there was any changing or compositing, it was probably to like get someone, like everybody smiling or, you know, minor correction to some sort of detail. But that's also not the point, right? Like, yes, it's a family photo. It won't have any political ramifications or anything like that. It's not going to tarnish anybody's reputation. At the same time, though, we are talking about something that's going through journalistic outlets. And that's the key. It's not an Instagram post.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is the context is extremely important here, in that she's kind of been invisible from the public eye for a while. People are concerned about her well-being, and this is the first photo that's been released in a while. And then to have that doctored, just it just feeds fire to the whole, like, oh, just the British
conspiracy
family covering up. Yeah, exactly. You're getting all those people riled up as well. Yes, exactly.
I feel like the intent of this was the opposite of that. The intent of this picture was to show that everything's fine, but all it did was the exact opposite. Now everyone's like, is everything fine? So it's like, all of that to me matters less. It also doesn't matter to me, like any of the stuff surrounding the royals. I don't care.
Well,
about,
these are our monarchs, Jared.
Exactly.
Easy. Okay.
You're talking to two Canadians.
Excuse me.
Yeah. They're still on our money, Jared.
You guys had a war. We had a peaceful transition to power. Okay. Like, there's a difference here. All right.
I think that's the takeaway, though. Not the peaceful transition to power. The fact that it was sent out as an official press image and it was doctored. And that's the issue here. And that, combined with the fact that it's with a very popular, well-known, I was going to say political, but not really, pop culture figure that most people are aware of, is why this is overarchingly important.
To remember, like, AP and Reuters, like, for people that don't know, they have to have incredibly strict standards. I mean, journalists are held to an incredibly high account. There cannot be any major editing to photographs. Certainly no compositing, no airbrushing, no clone stamping. Like, you know, and that's clearly what's been shown in this photo. I mean, there's some cloning, there's some bad compositing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you cannot do that for journalistic newsworthy photos. It's a breach of trust.
It's like exposure and white balance, basically.
Yeah.
That they'll allow you to mess around with.
Yeah. You usually can't even crop very much. Like, it's a very, very strict rule set.
For anyone who might say, well, what if it was taken by a smartphone? Because those can do that too. It wasn't. The Verge has reported that they had the original file and they got the metadata out of it and said that it was a 5D Mark III or 4, and it was edited in a version of Photoshop that doesn't even have AI in it. So this was done by hand.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I wanted to say.
I mean, I don't think
that's why we need... So yeah, this is why we need content. Cameras with content, you know, authenticity initiative stuff in it. We need to have. Yeah. We're saying that, right? When did they show an M11 P? Yeah, I mean, this is why this is important, so that the news journalists, the journalistic companies can see what changes have been made, and then automatically they wouldn't even make it to press, right? Like this would have been stopped way earlier.
It would
have
been flagged immediately.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right? If it didn't have content authenticity credentials and the AP was requiring it, they're part of the group, but they're not currently requiring that it be embedded with C2PA, CP2A. Yeah. I can't remember. I always get the letter and the number mixed up. But like, they aren't requiring it yet, but had they, this wouldn't have had it in there, and they would have rejected it. I think this is probably going to push that fast.
And then Matthew's mother-in-law would have been okay, you know?
Well, I think she's an interesting case study in that, like you said, Jaren, this is bringing awareness of this issue to the people who are just like flipping through a tabloid and it's like, what's going on with this doctored image? It's making them aware of these images being doctored potentially in the news.
Yes, yeah, like so our parents in general.
They're going to start demanding. They might not be like, I demand C2PA certification, but they might certainly be like, is this coming from, you know, if they hear there is an authorized way to label an image, then they might start demanding that, even if they don't understand the technical side of it.
It's scary and tough because, I mean, you know, the conspiracy theorists and stuff, that really starts to go, and then people distrust the media more, which is, I think, very bad. It's like, we need to be able to trust our media sources. So that's why this story is really important, no matter where you fall on what side of the fence on it. It's like, it's important that we understand that being able to trust what we're seeing and be able to then trust the media and understand that as a truth, I think that's critical. And so that's what we're working towards, not us, but, you know, the global photographic community, is to try to make this so that you don't have these thoughts and you don't have to feel like, oh, am I being lied to, or is this actually the truth? I mean, that's the whole point. So
yeah, it could be a turning point.
Could be.
All right. It's enough, Kate Middleton. Let's talk about third-party lenses on Canon. So as part of our series of interviews we did with camera companies in Japan, and by we, I mean me, Canon told me that they are about 50% of the way through negotiations with third-party lens manufacturers to bring autofocus third-party lenses to the RF mount.
Yay!
So what do you guys think about this? Like, it's how old is the RF mount now?
Yeah, like 5 years old at this point. And I mean, like halfway through the negotiations, I'm very curious what all that entails, because I would hope it would be like, pay us a small licensing fee and you can release your lenses on our mount. And then, I mean, this is going to touch into a story later in this episode, but I know, looking at the comments and just being aware of like the photographic community, Canon has a real image problem right now. And this is the main thing everyone's talking about. So they have to get this thing sorted out. You know, even if people aren't buying third-party lenses, they need to feel that they have the option.
Yeah. So, plus, frankly, they're the one mount where they really do need affordable, varied lenses.
They need the mid-range. It's cheap lenses or insanely premium lenses. There's nothing in between.
Yeah. And one of the other things that came from this interview was essentially, I asked them, like, why has it taken you so long? Like, why is Canon the only camera manufacturer that does not allow third-party lenses? And you can read the quote on Petapixel. I'll link to it in the description below, as I always do. But essentially, it comes down to because money. Mm-hmm. They basically just straight up said, and it makes sense. I'm glad they were honest. Like, I mean, this kind of frankness in this type of discussion is rare, but they essentially said we could make more money by selling our own lenses on our own mount and stopping anyone else from doing that. So that's what we did. And like, the photographer doesn't want to hear that.
No.
And I kind of sympathize with them. I do think that, especially when Canon, I feel like, gained the most momentum in the digital photography age, was because of the just breadth of EF lenses.
Yeah.
The fact that now we're in RF and that is not the case just feels very jarring to anyone who shot Canon for two decades or whatever. So, I mean, I get where they're coming from, but I don't love it. And I do think that they probably do feel that pressure now. It's finally it's finally reached the boardroom where they feel like they have to have that discussion.
We can't discuss a Canon product without that being like the most upvoted thing is, you know, release a Canon lens review and it's like, well, you better love it because you don't have any options from third parties. Exclamation,
Chris's section of are there alternatives is always no.
No.
Yeah. There's no alternatives.
Put
yeah,
in the,
straight up. There's
put
no alternative.
Old
yeah.
EF lens with worse optics on there. I guess that's your alternative.
We don't even consider that an alternative. Like it would be the same as saying the alternative would be to buy a Sony camera and have these alternative lens options. That's like the same general.
Yeah, adapt your EF lens onto the Sony body as well. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always curious about what actually goes on in the back end. I mean, these negotiations must be interesting, but you remember the SLR days, of course, third-party manufacturers made lenses for pretty much all the mounts. Manual focus, it was easier, no big deal. But, you know, I always wonder, like, back in the day, we always heard stories of how the manufacturers, the third-party manufacturers would reverse engineer everything. Like, it wasn't like they had permission. It was really just like, let's figure out how we can make their autofocus work with our
correct.
System.
And Canon just allowed it.
But I feel like there was always this constant struggle and battle. And so then it sort of seemed to be in the mirrorless world, more a spirit of cooperation. I mean, Sony got a lot of good press for that, where they're like, oh, we're actually sharing our algorithms and our software and our connection points and stuff to the manufacturers so that we can make stuff that works. That was kind of unheard of. So I've always been curious now, like, how friendly are these relationships? Obviously with Canon, it shows there is some antagonism. Based mostly off money, but you know, how friendly are they? How willing are they to divulge technology and to share mounts? But at the same time, you got like L Mount Alliance, where they're like, "Yeah, let's do this as an actual thing." So it's an interesting turning point, and I think a big part of that is because the third party manufacturers have really grudgingly earned a lot of people's respect.
Oh, yeah. Would I buy a camera that I can't put a Tamron 35-150 on? No, absolutely
right.
not. Yeah,
your favorite lens next to the Olympus 75-1.8.
Very different beasts, both wonderful.
Well, on this same note, I wanted to discuss this later because I didn't want to spend too much time on Canon, but I think it's a better segue here, so we'll move to it now. Canon recently had like a I don't know, it's not like shareholders meetings, like a corporate strategy summit. And right. one of the guys that I spoke to in Japan, Go Tokura or Tokura Go, presented and said that Canon has a goal in the next 2 years, and that is to achieve the overwhelming number one share of the mirrorless market. And they want, like, the language was strong. Like, they said, establish the absolute position. Like, they don't want to be, like, unquestionably the best. And
that
sell the most cameras.
Rebuttal there really got under there. Yeah, really pissed them
Sony.
Off, I guess.
Yeah, or yeah Sony, they really didn't, yes. like the, yeah. they didn't like the Sony battle. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is this a reasonable goal? Like, here's the stuff that before I ask you, I guess, here's what they point to. They are basically saying they want to have the entire EOS lineup be competitive across the market. And on top of that, they're going to focus very strongly on preparing for VR, which is something they said to me in our meeting in Japan prior to this. Like, they are thinking about VR. Like, when we talked about the Apple Vision Pro, like, they need to develop a better sensor and better optics because they believe the best way to make content for that is with a single camera, not a dual camera system. And I think you agreed, right, Jordan?
Absolutely. It's much easier for the average consumer. And I mean, we should say too, they're the only company making inroads on this because they have, you know, it might not hit the spec for Apple Vision Pro, but they do have a product for producing VR.
So do you think that in the next 2 years, Canon has the ability to become the overwhelming number one mirrorless company?
It's always great when companies make these statements, right? Because you're basically putting your face on the line. And so that would be great. More competition's always good. That being said, I mean, you know, VR is cool and everything, but I think it's still a fairly early small market. What Canon has to do is have a really big year this year with new releases. So it's great that they're promising that, and they're very hush-hush. I mean, maybe more than any other company, Canon are always very sort of closed, secretive, quiet until launches come out. They've always sort of had that. I've always felt that in the industry for like decades. And they'd really have to explode, right? I mean, we said, third party, that's going to be a great option. I think that's a good move. But how long is that still going to take to finalize and then produce lenses for? And on top of that, Canon has kind of the oldest lineup, right? I mean, the R5, the R6 Mark II is nice. They did increase their APS-C line, but obviously people want to see whatever this R1 is going to be like if that ever comes out in Olympics year. People want to see a new R5. So I don't know. We're going to have to see Canon really have a big year this year with big launches to really, I think, back up that claim.
I think it's really interesting they touch on as well, like security and industrial. I mean, that's a huge growth area, and obviously that doesn't rely on photography still being popular.
Right.
Which is a big thing on it. Like, I am concerned a little bit about on the photography side, just again, because of the perception that people have for it. But as well, they really lean on like cinema in this. And I mean, if the news that we're going to talk about later, you know, about Nikon really pushing in there in a huge way, it's going to be a lot more competitive in that kind of, you know, these aren't going to be competing with Arri's. It's that mid-range space, you know, that right. $10,000 to $20,000
a lot of cannons. Camera
is going to get, yes, exactly, very competitive in there. And that might really slow their growth on that. So I'm curious. I mean, Canon's always been bullish. Anytime we talk to them, we're like, unquestionably, number one. But a lot of the time I do wonder, like, are they, you know, Sony seems to be moving a lot of models as well. Yeah. There is some question there. So I can see why they'd want to just silence that completely, not get a PR response from Sony when they say they're number one. But I don't get the vibe from the photography community that I had 10 years ago when it was like, oh, Canon is unquestionably number one. And then there's number some one. Other fun brands out there.
Yeah. I mean, does an industrial barcode scanner count as a mirrorless camera?
I don't think so. No.
Does a video camera count as a mirrorless camera, like a cinema camera?
More so than a barcode scanner.
You know, yeah, maybe. Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, where does that claim come from? Right. If we're talking, like, I agree with Jordan.
This is essentially, it has to be the creative space.
The like, creative space, yeah.
They want to win there. Now, they're Canon is far more diverse in its investments in imaging than a lot of the other companies are.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense that they're going to mention their other stuff. But, like, two of the four points that they had in this presentation were pretty exclusive to RF. Like, so it's you got to look at it from that perspective. So, like, that's their goal. I feel like they need to work on the image problem. They need to open the mount, and they need to have lenses start to become available sooner rather than later for this to actually be able to happen.
Right.
That and have bodies that are more modern. I like the R3, but it most people don't.
I think it will be a big year for Canon. Like, I don't want to be cynical, but I think it actually will be a very big year for Canon, but I also think it better be a big year.
If they do the R1 and R5 too, that'll actually be very compelling.
And then, yeah. I mean, we can't also, 2025 can't be silent either. The next two years have to be significant.
Sure.
For them.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. 2023 was a bummer for them. Go ahead.
Yeah. They had some lenses and that was it. It was just really quiet. All right. So let's move on. Talk about a different company. Fujifilm doubled the manufacturing capacity for the X106 versus the X105. And it still wasn't enough. They can only make 15,000 of them per month, which means that they believe they are months from being able to fulfill current orders.
Day one orders, even, is the impression I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough to get this camera. I don't know. That's all I had for this first part. If you've got any thoughts on this.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, is that a bad thing for Fujifilm? I mean, everybody's like, oh, this sounds negative, but I think Fujifilm loves it.
No, this is great for them.
They're going to be great for them. In the news for the next 3 months of people like, how long will it take to get my camera?
It's free press.
Yeah.
And everybody is just like, oh, it's got to be so good that I must have it too, right? Like that kind of mindset is so prevalent in today's culture.
In this case, it's true though.
It is.
Except for, if you don't like 35 millimeter, maybe not. But like,
it's a perfectly fine camera. It's great. But I just think it's playing out very well to them. It's giving everybody else FOMO. And so they start piling on the pre-orders. And so, yeah, good for Fuji. I mean, this is... it's wild. And we were kind of wondering like, oh, made in China. I mean, that's going to double their production or improve their production. And it has. So it's good to have that confirmation. But at the same time, that doesn't seem to be slowing anybody. That doesn't seem to be turning anybody off. So,
yeah. No, I don't. I think that this went over exactly as they had hoped, where they can make more of them. Yeah. Probably at better margins.
Yeah.
And still not be able to sell them fast enough.
And it'll still be the hottest camera in the world for the rest of this year.
If I was a business and I'm making a product and I know for the next 3 to 6 months that everything I make will be sold, I'm very
killer.
Thumbs up happy. Yeah. We're talking millions of dollars. Yep. Happy. Yeah. On this note, I wanted to ask you guys, do you think it is possible for any camera brand to replicate this level of popularity? Ooh. I do want to point out one, Ricoh seems to think so. A lot of folks forget about Ricoh Pentax.
Yeah.
But the GR3 can't stay in stock either. So those are two right. premium compact cameras that fly off store shelves that Ricoh just basically, it's been rumored that they were having production problems keeping up with production since last year. Yeah. They just last week said, yeah, we can't. We can't even take more orders. We're stopping orders until we fulfill. So they're in a worse position as far as like manufacturing capacity than Fujifilm is with a right. camera that's 5 years old. So besides these that's two who true. Seemingly have cracked the code, can anyone else do this?
Yeah, of course they could. And it's funny, like Nikon killed the Coolpix A line. I keep giving them a hard time about this, a fixed lens APS-C compact, because it wasn't that hot, you know, back in, when did that come out? 8 years ago, man, or something like
so
that.
So long ago.
Yeah.
Like a decade. It was a long time. Not a decade, but pretty
long. And they absolutely have the heritage for it too. Just do like a Nikon style rangefinder. Any of these companies, if they did it, I bet if Sony re-released the RX1 series again right now would be perfect timing for it. Even if it's like a right. $4,000 camera, who cares? People would take that over waiting, you know, 6 months for the Fuji body. And I mean, the Leica Q3 as well has been hugely popular already. So there's definitely – that's
my
the
bad.
Other one too.
Yeah. I forgot about the Q3.
Yeah, yep.
I know you like that everywhere. Camera. I personally don't like that camera very
That camera's
You're
great.
Crazy.
Have you
You're
ever
crazy.
Tried manually focusing with that camera, Jaren?
Oh, my God.
But it's not for everybody, right? I mean, an X100 6 or a Ricoh GR3 is more accessible for most people. Hmm. I mean, Nikon's a good example, but the Coolpix A died because they were, like, not sexy cameras at all.
Yeah, no retro heritage.
Yeah, they were just bricks. And
I feel
like...
the same
like,
thing about the RX1? Is that the one
yeah.
they made? It was a good camera that just was not fun.
The RX1 was not that sexy a camera either, but it was full frame, and that was really exciting, right? I mean, it was a full frame with a good lens on it, and so that part
great
was really
focal
exciting.
Length.
Yeah,
what was,
yeah.
What was
and
it?
I mean, the GR3's got a great focal length.
So here's what I wrote a story about this today, and I think I just want to read this paragraph because it's my thoughts on this.
Right.
With the growth of capability in smartphone camera technology, just about every camera company completely divested from developing compact cameras since the market appeared to no longer want them. That is, at least, what the balance sheets showed. But right. there's more to it than that. Prior to the smartphone, Circuit City, Best Buy, CompUSA, and every electronics store was filled to the brim with cheap, low-quality compact cameras. There is a bit of nuance there that most of these manufacturers missed. It's not that photographers didn't want compact cameras, but rather they no longer wanted bad compact cameras. Yeah. And I think the only ones who really registered that are the ones that are now like full of success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And companies like Canon, Nikon, Sony, and even OM, who I want them to bring back the gosh darned pen.
Yeah. A lot of people do. Yeah.
They don't. I talk to them and they're just still like, I'm not sure anyone would buy that. And I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. They'd have to make it good though. Like,
yes.
And just, again,
you have heritage. Just make it like something you just make it fun.
Yeah. But everybody's got different concepts. Like, everybody's going to have a different concept of what camera they like and how they handle. I mean, I love the GR. I had film GRs. They were amazing. The digital GRs, I don't know. There's stuff about the menu and stuff that just kind of turned me off. I'm not, and it's not, that's nothing wrong with Pentax and Ricoh. That's really me. Like, personally, I just don't gel with them. It took me a while to fall in love with the X100 series, but the OM, like the Olympus, not OM, but the Olympus pens, I never thought that they were like finished cameras.
That's funny. Kind There's of, a lot of my friends and me personally, and my friends are not like hardcore photographers. They're all just like, below level of enthusiast, all loved the pen.
Yeah.
And many can't understand why they're not available in the US anymore.
Well, Chris and I really butted up against the pen because it was released after the EM5 II, but the autofocus was worse. And that was we were just like, as a value proposition, it's more money for worse autofocus. But if you look at it in terms of the design, I mean, if they dropped like a pen with a 3' bundle of like small f1.7, 1.8 lenses, you know, maybe like put a new finish on it, sell it for $2,500, I think it would just blow up.
I just feel like it wasn't a very sexy body. Like, it's beautiful styling.
Beautiful body.
It was like a blocky, just like,
they can fix
it. It didn't feel nice to hold. I think they could make something really sexy.
They can. There's a way to do it. Like, Canon and Nikon also have a history in that they can tap back in. Sony's got Minolta's heritage. Like, all of them have something that they can look back on and be like, okay, we're going to make something fun. And that's the other
key. Yeah, the Minoltas are great cameras, but they're not sexy. I feel like Sony has an opportunity to make like a totally fresh novel design. And Nikon, I mean, they could draw off their SP heritage, their S-series rangefinders.
I'm looking right now, and I don't know. I think the Minolta film cameras have something going for them.
Well, I mean, that's fine, and you're entitled to it. Not everybody can be right, Jaren.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, it looks like they even have like a rangefinder-y looking thing. Like, come on. This is better than the characterless Sonys we've been getting.
The other thing that's really odd is Panasonic gained its legitimacy as a camera manufacturer, I think, with the GF1, where like we had every pro be like, oh, I want that as a little second body with a 20 millimeter lens. And they've completely forgotten that. They went to the, you know, GM1, GM5 that might have been even too small, but they've forgotten that little mid-range. And I would love to see that in both L and Micro Four
Thirds. This is a cool looking camera.
You know, their classic rangefinders are pretty sexy. I am remembering that now. But the rest of the Minolta? Come on. Yeah,
Minolta. Yeah. Thank you for that. Like, and I mean, you know, they had this
partnership with the CL and stuff. Like, I get it.
I'm looking at the GF1, and I think this is actually kind of a neat looking camera.
Love the GF1.
So. Although I would argue that any like classic silver/black leatherette rangefinder from the 60s and 70s is kind of inherently sexy, honestly.
So if you have one in your history book as a company, just re-release it. It's not that hard.
Just style it.
But does Sony really want to pull off their Minolta heritage?
Does not seem to me like they do.
I don't think so.
They should.
I think they should.
I want to talk about that a little bit later, for sure. It's going to roll into another topic here.
Okay. Oh, all right. So then we'll move on then. To our main news story, the one that I'm sure all of you wanted to hear Chris and Jordan's opinion on. Out of nowhere, surprising just about everyone.
Like 11:30 at night, I'm just on the couch and I'm look at my phone and it's like, what in the... And I start texting you two immediately.
Yeah, they kept it secret.
Nikon acquired RED in what we argue is a massive shakeup in the cinema camera market. Jordan, why don't you lead us off here?
Yeah.
Let's talk about this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the scope of this, we haven't seen an acquisition like this, I'd argue, since Sony bought Minolta. And that's why I said we're going to touch on it a little bit later. Do you remember like Sony's photographic reputation before that was like high megapixel bad cameras? And then following that, Sony has become, you know, bouncing back and forth with Canon over number one place in the photo world.
Right.
So it absolutely gave them a real legitimacy and access to a lot of technology where they could jump up to become a major player. And I would argue this does the exact same thing for Nikon. There's a few major advantages they're going to get out of this. The big thing, I think, for a little bit of context, the major news story with Nikon last year was RED suing them about putting compressed RAW in their Z9.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, RED's gone after a bunch of companies and they've wound up with the RAW recording being removed. Remember the DJI Ronin, Chris, where we tested it and we were like, this is great. It records ProRes RAW internal. This rules. And then it shipped to market without that functionality after RED got sent a strongly worded email, I'm sure. So who knows exactly what happened behind the scenes, if this inspired it. But what it means now is Nikon now has access to, I would argue, the best compressed video codec out in the world. So they're going to be making cameras that shoot extremely efficient RAW video. There's no reason for them not to.
And they own RED. Like, some folks have the idea that maybe Nikon will be less litigious with this patent. No, they won't.
No.
Now Nikon owns this patent.
They've just got a passive revenue stream now.
Yeah.
But they fended off. They basically won that case, right?
They didn't. The details of that, they settled, which my guess is went to, well, what if we just acquired you? And RED was like, well, then we wouldn't sue you anymore if you just went to buy us.
Yeah.
So that's likely. I mean, the amount of time it takes to get through an acquisition lines up with how long it's been since that was dismissed or settled, quote, and last week. So I do think it was a major player. I mean, no one's ever going to confirm or deny this, but I do think it was a major player in the acquisition. We'll actually wait for this. I'm sure they have to, because they're a publicly traded company. Nikon has to say how much this cost at some point. I'm very curious how much they
RED's not a public traded company, although maybe that'll change now. Well, so this does
get folded into Nikon. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So this brings up an interesting question about, you know, and Jordan, you kind of said it, like when Sony took over Minolta, they basically grew their flower out of the corpse of Minolta. right? Like they made some cameras that obviously were inspired or had the same technology,
straight
obviously
up, the same cameras. Lens. They had up. The same ping pong sounding yeah. shutter. Yeah.
Everything, right? But they quickly transition to dissolve that, take the technology, grow on it, and make their own product. So I think some people are wondering, like, is Nikon going to take Red and effectively dissolve them to some degree? You know, we're going to see a lot of the Red technology come into Nikon cameras. I would, and they already yeah. make excellent yeah. hybrid cameras. So yeah, we're going to see those benefits, but are they going to keep Red going as a separate cinema company? It is a different relationship than Sony and Minolta, because Sony was trying to be in the same field. Here now Nikon has diversified, but that's still an interesting concern. Is Red going to continue? Are they going to benefit from Nikon's technology? Are they going to take on Nikon's lens mount? I mean, that's a very strange,
I mean, that one seems to me
dynamic.
That's a no
there's
question.
No argument there. Yeah. There will be a yeah. Z-mount one. Nikon therefore needs cinema optics because they yes, don't they do. Really have them.
Yeah, nah. There's shockingly good lenses for video. Like Nikon, second to Panasonic, I'd say. They really prioritize breathing correction. They let you actually flip the direction of their manual focus rings, which is what kept me from using them forever.
For so long.
I'm not going to relearn my muscle memory, you know, when every cinema lens in the world focuses.
You're
the
oldest
way.
Of dogs, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think, you know, the Canon question is really interesting because Red was they were putting RF mounts on their cameras. Suddenly we saw compressed RAW appearing in Canon cameras. I'm very worried if you've got like an R5C, like, okay, Nikon now owns Red. Are they going to say like, you know what? No more compressed RAW.
We're not going to renew that.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
sure it's a contract.
Don't update the firmware on your R5C and suddenly find out it's not shooting compressed RAW anymore. I'd be very concerned about that. But yeah,
they have to think Nikon's going to do something to make themselves better and make Canon worse if
yeah.
they can.
Yeah, I can't.
There's no reason
playing.
Why they would make Canon better at this point. This movie is entirely
such an antagonistic relationship. Like in Canon and Nikon's minds, it's still Canon versus Nikon, which yeah. I think is why they let Sony kind of slip by for a long time. The other thing too is we're talking a lot about like, oh, what could this mean for Nikon cameras? But I'm more interested in what this could mean for Red cameras. Because I would say Red has really been losing quite a bit of market share in like high-end production. We used to hear, you know, if it's a VFX-centric movie, a lot of them were shot on Reds, especially when Arri didn't have high-resolution cameras. Now they do. And Arri like owns, you look at, you know, the Oscar-nominated movies, they're either shot on film or they're shot on Arri by and large. They right. have really kind of owned that. Because I've always said, if you're spending enough money to have a crew of 100 people on set, the cost of the camera doesn't matter. So you might as well standardize it with whatever is the industry standard. This gives Red a really interesting niche where they could be the smaller cameras that have Nikon stabilization, Nikon's very good video autofocus ever since the Z9 and Z8 came out, shooting compressed RAW internally right into the camera. If you're doing like, you know, high budget documentary work or low budget filmmaking, suddenly that's really compelling. You don't need a focus puller on set.
Yeah.
And you're getting access to a Z mount that is the most flexible lens mount on the market right now. It's the shortest flange back and the widest mount.
But Nikon also gets benefits for their camera. I mean, you know, they're now getting a global shutter, which is interesting. They're getting, yeah. You know, the sensor technology, that's kind of a curious way to go. Because, I mean, Red do say they make their own sensors, but so do Nikon, right? Like, it's they're designing them. They're saying, this is the spec that we want to have matched. But that's not, they're not making the sensors. So it'll be interesting to see how that relationship does going forward. But yeah, they do have access to interesting sensors now they didn't have access to before. It's going to be positive. I think it's going to be very strong. I just wonder, are they still going to call things like monitor lizards and Gila monsters and Tyrannosaurus Rexes?
Gila monsters is a good one. I don't think they've used that one. They should.
I sure hope so. Like,
I'm very
concerned. Are we going to have Nikon leopard geckos or something? I don't know.
I'm concerned for the 10-year-old boy who's been naming all their products, and they get it because it has to be a 10-year-old boy, and they're like, okay, we want you to watch Last Action Hero and the 1999 Godzilla and then go name our products. That's the yeah. task that they give this kid. Is he going to be out of work now? Are they just going to call them boring conventional product names? Because that would be a real blow, I think. I support that kid.
So I'm actually curious what listeners think. Do they think that Red will remain an independent brand, or will over the next couple of, I don't think it will take very long if they choose to go this route, that those will simply just become Nikon cinema cameras. And rename them, or they may keep them as they are, but anything newly released will be a Nikon cinema camera. I'm not sure what the route will be there, because there are many who argue that Red is not holding the position they once did, mainly because Arri is making arguably, some people say, better cameras than Red was making in the digital age. Red was like the first major digital cinema camera, and they've simply just not been keeping up. Yeah. So if Nikon pushes that direction, do you think that they have the chance to actually challenge Arri?
I personally think Nikon's going to take the Red brand and try to really advance the sort of lower to mid-range market. I think that's right. I don't think they're going to try to compete with Arri necessarily, at least not at the start.
So that's where Canon cinema cameras live, right?
Canon and
Red Magic. I think Nikon wants to destroy Canon.
Yeah. So they just want to own whatever Canon has.
And not only that, but let's also remember, like, you know, Nikon's done a really good job of making hybrid cameras. I mean, the Z8, I don't think, still gets enough fanfare for how good a video camera it is. But there's a market that's really controlled by Sony and Canon. So I think Nikon definitely wants to play in that field, right?
There's immediate, really pushback. Yeah. Their brand perception has just immediately elevated to every, you know, DP and assistant camera being like, oh, Red is a actual high-end brand that I trust. You know,
because Nikon's never had that before. They've never had that before. So now they have their cinema division. I think that's exciting.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Jared. No.
I was just going to say, the way I liken it is, Red is the girl that Canon was dating for a little while, and they were, you know, dabbling with the lens mount and things, and Nikon has just swooped in, not and only because her. Red makes a lot of sense for Nikon, but also just as a little waving of the middle finger to Canon. That's my ulterior theory.
Oh, man. I guess the only thing that really kind of intrigues me then about the naming is, if you are going to go to battle with Sony and Canon in their cinema divisions, which I think they are, Sony are branded Sony's, Canon are branded Canon's. Does Nikon want to go into that arena using the Red name, or do they want to go into the arena using the Nikon name? And I feel like they probably want to go into that arena using the Nikon name.
I bet it's going to be a slower transition. I think it'll be like the Red, you know, fly mini winged dragon by Nikon.
Not Nikon,
slowly shifted over to the Nikon, blah, 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 powered by Red.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually be just the Nikon, whatever. Yeah. And I think they could do that over the course of 2 to 3.
Or they'll just make the cameras Red, right? Like, they'll just make them Red.
That would be a terrible decision. Any reflective you'd see this stupid. They made a Red camera, like a Red camera.
Oh, you meant like,
and everyone was like, you have to spray paint this thing black immediately or it shows up.
Yeah, but on set, who cares, right? On set, who cares?
There's mirrors and glass on set.
So,
I mean, Red cameras already look very attention grabbing, and they love that. That's what they want them to do. Everybody wants to see them on set and be like, whoa, that's a Red, right? Like, battery life is gonna be a pain in the ass. Yes.
What I want to close this discussion on is looking back at what feels like forever, but was really just 3 years. In January 2021, Nikon was hitting rock bottom. They lost $720 million, the most in their history that year, and were just floundering financially. That was the kick in the pants that turned them around to the point where they are now buying cinema companies. I can't think of another situation in all of tech where a company went from looking as though they may go out of business to being dominant in 3 years.
You know, I don't know. Well, who knows? You know,
it's just wild to me. I'm so whatever the executives at Nikon did, they just feel different than what most tech companies, especially out of Japan, you would feel.
They have so much swagger right now, talking to like our Nikon reps and everything like that. Ever since the Z9 is just like, it feels very like Chris and I were there for the D3, D700 era when Nikon suddenly caught up technologically to Canon in like completely out of the blue very quickly. That feels a lot like this right now. And I think they're taking more advantage of it to future-proof things. Instead of like, hey, we had a great year, let's just roll with that. They're like, okay, how can we really diversify, which is something they have to do badly. You know, they're doing sunglasses now too. We talked about that the other day. but to just assure that they're still a technological leader, because basically for the last little while, they've been like dependent on, I don't know, what's Sony developing?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm cool just time, really man. Impressed. Cool time. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, this is really neat. I think I have never seen people you talk to people at Nikon, they are really proud of working there right now. And as much as Canon has a perception problem with like how people view them, I think Nikon is the polar opposite of how people view them.
Everybody right sees them on the upswing. Yeah. You know, that is kind of the perception,
right? It's a cool place to be.
Yeah. And maybe we'll actually get a Red camera to review because we know people in Nikon. So that'd be pretty sweet. And like Red has a studio too. Is it like Nikon Studios is going to be a thing? That would also, you know, they launch new cameras. Let's go to a sound stage. That would be badass.
I think that sounds neat. We'll see what happens at NAB this year, which is next month. I'm curious
now you have how to go, much. Jen.
I mean, that's why they announced it so early, right? I mean, they definitely want to have a.
You think there's going to be some fanfare? I wonder if they moved their booths closer to each other. We can probably find out. There's an exhibition list.
It's all anybody's going to talk about at those booths.
Oh yeah, right now they've basically already won NAB until somebody comes out with something better.
Yep.
The other thing too, their corporate culture is so different. On a recent episode, we talked about the most ridiculous things we've seen at trade shows, and I talked about when Red was having people tattooing their logos on their bodies to move them up the wait list. Like, that is the most corporate, like the opposite of Nikon's corporate culture, having talked to both companies. Like, Red is a very bro-y company. I'm wondering how this is going to shake out. You know, they have a lot of employees too. Are those people going to stay with Nikon? Who knows?
Yeah. Crazy.
All right. Well, we'll find out. But until then, what have you guys been up to?
We just had an Oscar party. That was cool.
Chris hosted this year.
Yes, I hosted this year.
And do you have food at this Oscar party? Do you make
Jordan's wife won? She destroyed us all with her guesses. So that was good.
19 out of 23. That's very impressive.
Wow, that is
very really impressive.
But,
yeah.
But you mentioned snacks? Food. Oh, yeah. Chris brought the thunder this year. Go ahead, Chris. Take. You know,
no, I like credit. It when other people ingratiate.
So you know, he made this lasagna that was like beef mixed with sausage that was just delightful. He said there was some red wine that went into the
little
lasagna,
bit of fennel
not
seed.
Into him.
He was I put very, a lot of red wine into me.
Very gregarious at the time we arrived. great party. Ev cleaned up. I was very
Chris,
impressed.
I'd like to have a lasagna throwdown with you at some point.
I'll throw my lasagna down on you anytime.
Because
I will rub my lasagna all over you.
I'll bring
and spank you, and I'm going to win this fight.
Not what I was referring
that's
to.
That's not? What do you mean by throwdown? That's like a wrestling.
Jordan will have a blind taste test of which one is better.
Yeah, it's got to be blind,
that's
too.
That's not nearly as exciting.
Because I feel like he'll feel like he needs to say that yours is better than mine, Chris.
Well, I'm around Chris a lot more than Jaron in person, so I got to keep him
And Chris
happy.
Would be very upset if he loses.
I'd be insufferable. Oh, man, I'd bring it up every month. I'd be like, oh, you don't like this camera? Like, you didn't like my lasagna?
Yeah, we have to
review
do this
over.
Because I think I can win.
I don't think so. It was pretty good. If I do say so myself, it was pretty
damn
good.
I have some real Florence history behind me. Like, mine is a true recipe from Italy. So
right. I mean, I did use ricotta. I know
there's differences among our lasagnas. So yeah, we'll see. I know, but you can't say anymore because Jordan will know which one of us made it.
Can we expense a trip to Portland, or are we getting you up here, Jaron,
for lasagna?
We'll make something happen.
We got to be in the same room.
I'm sure we're going to go to another event in California at some point, and we both have said that we're tired of eating out the whole time.
Let's do an Airbnb and
we'll do an Airbnb lasagna throwdown. And then,
but I mean, there was also a bit of soy sauce in there. There was a bit of Worcestershire sauce in there. I mean,
interesting.
You know,
yeah, very unconventional.
We'll see.
Let's move on to tech support. We've got a lot of questions here today. We're going to listen to a SpeakPipe first. This is from Max from Ukraine. And this is very directly related to what we just talked about. So that's why I put it
Not lasagna.
Not lasagna, no. About a certain color.
He wants to talk about the
that
Oscars.
That would be strange. Could you imagine if there's lasagna-rated SpeakPipe? That would be interesting.
He wants to know about Gosling.
Let's listen in.
Hey, guys. Max from Ukraine here. So I have a question about RAW video. I've heard that Red has patents that prohibit manufacturers from letting us record RAW video internally on our mirrorless cameras. However, we already have 10-bit video with log profiles, so couldn't we just up that to 12-bit and have 12-bit video with log profiles on our cameras? And would that be any different from 12-bit RAW video recorded externally to Ninja 5 and other such recorders. In other words, what constitutes raw video? Thanks for your answer in advance, and love your podcast.
Okay, this is a very common misconception because a lot of people are coming from a photography background where you've got a JPEG with no dynamic range and very minimal ability to edit that compared to a RAW file, which gave you all the dynamic range that sensor was capable of, the ability to push and pull white balance and tint as far as you want it. Things are a little bit different in video because raw video takes up so much space, everyone started to try and figure out alternatives to keep file size down, still give you some flexibility. And that's why we saw log video come out. So this is giving you expanded dynamic range compared to like a classic broadcast profile, and some ability to shift color by recording a very flat image and letting you saturate it yourself. So often people are like, well, I need my camera to shoot RAW because I want the most dynamic range in it. And honestly, with most of these cameras, you're getting almost the same dynamic range as shooting 10-bit log. A logarithmic curve can encode as much as a 14-bit RAW image. The big difference when you need RAW video is, do you really want to push and pull color? That's a huge part of it. Or if you want to key things, you know, if you're doing high end like green screen work, you know, say you're doing a Marvel movie where it's all going to be composite and in post, that's where it's very effective for that. And
what? They're not real?
I just broke Chris's brain.
What?
Or do you really want control over noise reduction and sharpening? Because you're getting the actual image right off the sensor. You determine how much detail you want, you know, as a trade-off with the amount of noise that you want. That's where you really see it. So for the majority of productions, and we're really seeing this when you talk about cameras shooting on Arri's, not a lot of them are shot in Arri RAW unless it's for VFX work. It's so often like it's recording ProRes with a log profile is a very common workflow for that because you're still getting access to bags of dynamic range.
Bags.
Mm-hmm. So yes, I do think it's very cool that we're going to like Red RAW is incredibly efficient, and it's actually quite easy to edit. You don't need a beast of a computer. I remember 6 years ago when I was shooting a short film on the Red Dragon, and Chris, you were there. We were going through dailies on a laptop, and this is an old Intel MacBook, playing it in real time, which is nuts. So you think of how far we've come.
It's very impressive because that computer's not very good.
compare that to like, you know, Canon's RAW format or Nikon's, which still demands some horsepower for sure when you're editing those. So that's a very cool thing. It's going to make RAW video more accessible, but don't feel like you absolutely need RAW video to get good dynamic range, good color, things like that. Log video has come a huge way. You know, I was shooting recently on a Z8, in a high contrast scene, I'm like, I'm just going to shoot N-Log. It's got tons of dynamic range and I'll be able to push the color exactly to where I need it to. You know, if I'm doing a film with special effects, sure, I'll shoot RAW for it, but I'm also paying for
You basically
for
never shoot RAW. Yeah. There's no point shooting RAW for our show. I mean, you never do it unless we're testing specifically the RAW on the camera. So yeah, it's...
When this came up, Chris, I got a little nostalgic and I was like, have we ever shot RAW, like Red RAW for our show? And there is one time. I'm curious if you can recall what that was.
Of course I can't. I don't even remember what we did 3 weeks ago. What was that? A lens? I don't know. It was a Canon, I think. I don't know.
No,
were we in Germany?
Red Code RAW. We shot that when we were making a dating video for Levi Hall.
Oh,
our dear friend, on an episode comparing some lights. We went and pulled out the fan, shot everything Red RAW. You should definitely check that out if you get a chance.
Yeah, because we know that women respond to accurate color. So, you know, that was what... Why would I remember Levi's dating profile video as the one thing we shot in RAW? That's...
All right, thanks, guys. So the next one is another speak pipe. This one is from Nick. Let's listen in.
Hello, all. Love the podcast and look forward to listening every week. I currently have a full setup of Nikon Z gear, Nikon Z8, a couple PF lenses, 85-1.2 that I use primarily for portraiture and wildlife slash nature photography. I continue to be attracted to the computational features of the OM slash Olympus cameras, such as Live ND, Grad ND, Live Comp, etc. And I find myself questioning if these computational features are enough to spend the money on another camera, specifically the OM-1 Mark II, and a couple lenses to go with that. I do have the comparable focal lengths, comparable weight, and better light gathering with my Nikon system, but miss the computational features of the OM system cameras. I know this question is hypothetical, but as technology in full-frame cameras improve, I'm wondering if slash when you all believe computational features like Live ND, Grad ND, etc., will be engineered into full-frame cameras in the future, specifically Nikon Z series cameras. Thanks for exploring this fun hypothetical with me and sharing your thoughts on the future of computational photography and cameras. And of course, thanks for all that you do.
It is a fun hypothetical, Nick. Absolutely. I mean, you're not crazy. The computational features in the OM system cameras are very useful. I actually really do find them quite useful. It's nice not having to bring filters. It's nice not having to bring a tripod in some situations. I think that is an effective tool, and I would absolutely love to see it come to other mounts. So for me to answer your first question, is it worth doing it? I think if you're the kind of person that wants like a more compact camera setup that you can take in the field where you don't have to bring a lot of stuff, if that'd be a real big benefit to you, then yes, I think that's exciting. If that's not really something you do, then as enjoyable as it is, I don't think it's necessarily worth getting a whole other system. But at the same time, I would love to see it come to full frame cameras. I would love to see it come to manufacturers other than OM system. And the real challenge is, can we get sensors that read out fast enough in full frame? Yes, we're getting there, especially with Nikon. But can we also get the processing power to process those bigger files and do it properly? And that's and the software. I mean, you have to have the back end to support it too. But
there's another,
I think that's the
another piece in there too that I was reminded of recently, and that's that OM system owns patents.
Yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to, like, a lot of, there's some cool image stacking stuff you can do to improve image quality, and that's part of how they're giving you, you know, in some cases, like handheld high res, you're getting basically full frame DR and image quality on those, but with multiple shots. It's some of the other stuff, like, you know, the where it's building the image in the live bulb mode or live ND. You know, those are the things especially that I really love that we haven't seen on any other cameras. And I do strongly suspect there's some patents there, and that's why.
Yeah, I think I got my question answered for me. I couldn't remember who told me this while I was in Japan, but it was like the reason Sony's A9 III requires you to use like their really bad computer software to do any of their computational stuff is because they can't do it in camera because of a patent.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's tough.
Wow.
I want to see more computational things. I actually have a story that I'm working on for this week where one of the companies I spoke to just says they don't even think photographers want it, which is a whole other
crazy
thing. So we'll talk about that maybe in the future. But yeah, like in addition to maybe they're not sold that it's necessary, they don't see it as a viability because they can't.
Yeah, or it could, yeah. It sounds like, I think a lot of the manufacturers just say this stuff because they can't do it. Yeah.
They're like, no one wants it. Of course
not. Nobody wants us to.
Access to it. Yeah.
Why would we want to? We don't want to even. It's like, well, yeah. No, you do. You do want to. It's very useful technology. And I do hope we start to see this move out through the ecosystem. That would be really useful. Very useful.
All right. So the next one is an email we got, and I forwarded you guys the pictures. So I don't know if you actually got a chance to look at them, but we do need to have some show and tell time here. I'll put them up on screen for those who are watching on YouTube, and I will describe it as best I can for those who are listening to audio only. But this one is from Amaro, and they emailed us and said, a couple days ago, I went for a late winter hike in my nearby New Hampshire mountains. I took along my X-T5 with a few lenses, including my Rokinon 12mm with an ND filter and tripod to try for some waterfall long exposures. Chris loves waterfall long exposures.
I do love them.
On one of the prettier waterfalls I came across, I ended up shooting into the sun, stopping down to try and get some of those sun stars Chris is always going on about. Isn't that name redundant, by the way? A sun star.
Five observational points for that. Well done.
And I took a bunch of shots with a range of exposures from times from 15 seconds to 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a really long exposure. I'm looking at my pictures later and noticed something interesting in the 2 minute exposures. In the bottom of the frame in the shadows, you can actually see the 12mm lettering, which is printed along the inside border of the lens's front element. Sure enough, if you look at the shorter exposures and pull them up a few stops, you can faintly see the lettering. I just thought this was funny and curious about why exactly this happens. Any idea how to avoid it in the future when using an ND filter? Would a lens hood or some additional kind of filter do anything? Or should I just not worry about it since it's in the extreme situation and frankly, the shorter exposures were better and not even that noticeable in those. I figured they'd be better. Right. 2 minutes is a long time and you're not getting much benefit out of that. Thanks. Big fan of your podcast and y'all's work. So I put the pictures up as I was reading that, and right. You don't really see it in the full image, but when they zoom in, you can definitely you can see it in the rocks there.
Very cool. You don't see this very often. It's internal reflection off the ND filter, I'm sure. Yeah. And the easy fix, honestly, is black out the letters. Whether that be
with some gaffer's
tape. If you want to go extreme with a Sharpie, but yeah, I mean, even just black gaffer tape and you can cover them up. But yeah, you even see some manufacturers actually do insist on black lettering if they are going to put it on the inside ring to avoid said problem. But again, it's something that's so rare, you would not normally see it except in these very long exposures. You could toy around with different ND filters, but the fix to just black out the letters is so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to point out I've run into this issue as well. When we were shooting the short film A Walk Down to Water, we actually had panes of glass that we were shifting in front of the lens to create some interesting reflections. And you definitely saw the lettering on there. Chris's idea of blacking it out will absolutely fix that issue. You can still get reflection from the sun bouncing off the front element and then back against the glass. So one fix that I did find for that is most of your lenses, if you're doing a very long exposure at an incredibly small aperture, focus a little bit past infinity. All your lenses are going to give you this option to do it on a 12 millimeter. Infinity is like a foot away. Throw that lens a little bit further and you'll actually get less of the reflection that's very close. And actually your depth of field is picking that up. You can throw it past there as well. That's a trick. It's not going to eliminate it, but it'll now turn into a blur instead of very clear lettering. Little fix.
Yeah. Most importantly, Sunstar is maybe a redundant term, but what do you suggest otherwise?
Sparklies? Spiky ball. The mace. The sun mace is excellent on this
Sun mace. Okay, great. Yeah.
I will say mace. That Sunstar is not recognized as a word by any of the correctors that we use.
I still have no idea how you want me to write that in the articles. One word, two words, capitalized. I have no idea what you want me to do.
I'm just rolling with whatever you put in there.
All right. But yeah, Sun Morning Star, you could, but that's redundant again.
All right. So we're moving on. This is another speak pipe. This one is from Martin.
Hello, guys. Quick question here. I have been trying to upgrade to mirrorless, and I have three options in mind. The Sony A7 R3, the Sony X6700, or the Fujifilm X-H2. The question is, I like to crop a lot. I do architecture, landscapes, and some occasional wildlife. So considering that the cameras are going to be basically the same price, and it would cost me exactly the same to upgrade to any mirrorless system of the three that I'm choosing between, what should I get from your perspective? Thank you.
These are such tough questions, Martin, because we have to go by the criteria that you're providing is most important to you. And obviously, if you crop a lot, the key thing is going to be megapixels. You want as many megapixels as possible. So, you know, something like the A7 R3, certainly the X-H2 to some degree, that would be advantageous if that's something you like to do a lot. But then there's so much more to be considered as far as speed of focus, speed of shooting, what kind of photography you want to do, that kind of thing.
Well, this is architecture, landscape, and occasional wildlife. So two out of the three of those aren't moving much.
Yeah.
No, but one of them moves a lot.
Yeah, but he said occasional. So if based on what he's provided, we have to go with the things that he's shooting the most of, which aren't moving.
Yeah. My look at it is basically the 67 is your best wildlife camera. The A7 R3 is your best landscape architecture camera. The X-H2 is a really nice sweet spot there. I'd say it's a better focuser than the A7 R3 and still gets you some nice detail. But if you're primarily doing architecture landscape, go A7 R3. And then you're still – the autofocus might not be as sophisticated as modern systems, but you'll still be able to get some wildlife.
Yeah. And dynamic range is excellent. And yes,
That sensor is fantastic.
Yeah. And you can crop a lot. Yeah.
All right. Moving on. This is an email from Action JD. Hey guys, love the show. I am a photographer who photographs birds and wildlife. I live in Savannah, Georgia. The weather here The it's a very beautiful city. I love Savannah. Yeah. The weather here, the majority of the year is humid and warm, except for a couple of months. A common problem with long distance wildlife shooting is heat haze or refraction. I am currently using a Canon R7 with a 100 to 400 millimeter RF lens and a 1.4x teleconverter for about 900 millimeters field of view. Yeah. I use the zoom in feature of the camera, but sometimes it's still not enough to tell how sharp a photo will be. Is there any device that can be used to measure or verify the amount of refraction to prevent wasting time shooting photos in poor conditions? Thanks for your help. This is very specific.
Yeah. I don't know of such a device personally, other than the human brain and eyeball with looking through the EVF and zooming in. I mean, yeah, I don't know what else you could really do as far as like a tool to tell you if there's heat haze.
Yeah,
there's always heat haze.
The big thing, first of all, I started looking into this to see if there was a device, and it took me to NASA technical papers, and I realized I'm a big dumb dummy. So that isn't the solution. So my thing is don't look for sharpness when you're zooming in to check. Look for movement. If you have the camera locked off, put your lens to the maximum magnification and point it as far as you can, the closest to infinity possible. If you're seeing movement, that means your sharpness will be impacted.
You got your heat haze.
Yeah, that's the way that I can quickly test for it, because honestly, viewfinder resolution punched in varies wildly camera to camera. So that's a better way. Just look for movement.
You could also camp out till about 2:30 or 3 p.m. right after that afternoon rainstorm clears a lot of that humidity. And right after that, you might have better luck.
Yeah. You're going to get heat haze, though. I mean, there's different things, too, right? We're talking about heat creating all the wobblies and the light waves, but also it could just be moisture in the air, fog, that kind of stuff that you're talking about, atmospherics. Unfortunately, there's no way to test that, even looking through the viewfinder. I mean, you kind of really notice it afterwards. Just, I don't know. Now we got dehaze slider. That's cheating. There you go.
It does help. This is slightly unrelated, but I was just listening to a WTF podcast with Rodrigo Prieta, the DP on Killers of the Flower Moon. We talked about it last week, how he shot that sequence of the people during the fire. And he said something that never occurred to me. He's like, we set up the shot. It looked like garbage until my focus puller accidentally focused on the heat haze. And that's how they pulled off that really cool look. So now I'm going to go out. I'm just focusing on waves of haze. That's all I'm doing until I can create something that beautiful. Yes. That's my new challenge.
But that's not a solution for you.
This is not a solution for you at all. I just thought it was fascinating and wanted to talk about it.
Related thing.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Two more. This one is a SpeakPipe again. This one is from Scott.
Hey, Petapixel. My name is Scott, and I have a question for you guys. I love to go on adventure travel trips every year. And so far, I've been traveling and hiking with my Sony a7 R3 and two lenses. I have a Sony GM 24-70, the new model, and an older Sony GM 16-35. They've been great lenses since I skew towards landscape photography. However, I'm planning to take some trips to South America and Africa, where I think I'll be more interested in run-and-gun wildlife shots. Therefore, I want your opinion. Should I buy a Sony 70-200 GM2 or opt for the slower but longer Sony GM 100-400? Also, should I get a teleconverter? Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
I mean, good choice on the excellent lenses. You got the second version of the 24-70. That's a great move. My general thought pattern would always be go more distance, you know, especially obviously in decent light. Even with an A7 R3, even in poor light, it's going to be fine. I wouldn't be put off by the slower 100 or 400, and you absolutely want the range. I'd even want further. At the same time, though, you kind of mentioned it there, 70-200 GM2 with a teleconverter will basically give you the same versatility as the 100-400 at distance. And then it is sharp. That setup is good. I wouldn't worry about the downsides of using teleconverter there. And then you have the versatility of a very fast 70-200 for doing close-in work, but even more so like, you know, portraits of local people or, you know, anything like that, indoor shooting.
70-200 is also one of my favorite landscape lenses.
It's a great lens and it's easy to carry, like, you know, and any sort of night.
How good 200 is for landscapes.
Yeah, absolutely. And any sort of low light wildlife photography where you can maybe get closer, although in Africa, I don't know how close you want to get. the 7200 would be a good option. So that with the teleconverter, I feel would be more versatile than just the 100 to 400. But regardless, I would normally default to whatever gives me the biggest focal range.
Yeah, I would go 70-200 with the teleconverter for that extra light, like Chris mentioned. Also, that is a very good close-up lens if you want to do some detail shooting as well, which the 1-4 is not fantastic for. But yeah, I totally agree with Chris. Good job, babe.
And thanks, Jordy Boo. I appreciate that. And I mean, it's a light lens. Like, it's quite compact, quite easy to carry. So it's not a pain to carry at all. Good job, Jordy Boo.
Last one is Jared. Last one is from Charouz. It's another SpeakPipe.
Hello. I have a question about what camera to buy. I'm looking, is it worth buying a camera now, or is it at this time of the year, or is it best to wait and see what Fuji and Canon bring out? I'm looking for an all-round camera which can do travel, street photography, landscapes, and money is no object. What would you recommend? Should I go Fuji GFX 100-2 or R5 or Nikon Z8, or just wait a couple of months and see what comes out before the Olympics? Thank you.
I feel like this idea of like waiting for the latest and greatest and chasing that is just a never-ending escalator.
Yeah, if you've been waiting for the R1 to buy a camera, you haven't taken a picture in 4 years.
I mean, you got to go with what you think you'll enjoy based on excellent reviews by the many people who do them, including Chris and Jordan. Or just Chris and Jordan.
Don't worry about the other reviews. Just Petapixel, Chris and Jordan. Jaren, baby, what? Come on.
Don't. What do you guys think? Am I crazy? I just don't know. I don't personally like waiting for the next big thing. I don't do that with smartphones. Right, I don't do it with cameras.
You know, and Charouz is asking a question, which is tough because it's very open-ended. We get these a lot. Money is no object. That's great. But I mean, like GFX 100-2 is a wildly different camera than an R5 or Z8. And so, you know, it sounds like your interests are fairly broad, which is great. You know, travel, street photography, landscapes, money is no object. But I mean, of the three that you're listing, a Z8 would probably be my choice just because we are getting, I mean, the R5 is good too, but I feel like the Z8 is a more full feature camera.
Of the cameras he's mentioned, the R5 is the longest in the tooth.
That's what I was going to say. I really expect that we'll see an update on that. Like, comparing it to the recent, like the R6 II and R3 on some recent shoots, I really felt the difference when I jumped back to the R5. Mm-hmm.
But again, like, what's the R5 II going to be like? I mean, nobody knows. That's the hard thing to say. So,
I wouldn't go GFX. Stuff that is madness that I don't think is happening at all.
Canon, you know, and an R1, like, I mean, the Olympics might reveal the R1. Hopefully that we'll see that, you know, if they're even going to call it that. But I don't think that would be a great camera for you personally. I don't, without even knowing what it does. I mean, that's a tool that's going to be made specifically for journalism, if the sports, Alpha 1, and action.
Like, if the A1 and the A9 III are not of interest to you now, then the R1 won't be either.
Right. You know, and for travel and street photography, I'd personally want something a little bit slow, like not slower, a little bit smaller, lower key, a little bit more discreet, a little bit lighter, frankly. So, you know, from what you're choosing here, Charouz, I think the Z8 would probably be your best choice. But as Jaren said, you can't really bank on what's going to come out in the future. Otherwise, you'll be waiting eternally.
Yeah, you'll never buy anything.
I think the Z8 is the most versatile camera.
I really, really like that camera. Yeah. Like a lot. So
sure.
Great I'm all about it. I think that's a good recommendation. And I don't think Nikon will have anything this year that would make you feel like missed out.
No, and we traveled with that to Idaho. It was perfect.
Yeah. I don't think we're getting a Z8 too or next year. Okay, that's it. Let's move on to Never Read the Comments, where I read every comment.
But condolences, man.
It's a war zone in there sometimes. But I did pick out a few that I wanted you guys to talk about. This one is from A.A. Wrong. I'm sure it's supposed to be something else, but I want to say it like the key.
Aaron G, maybe? Or yeah, A.A. Wrong.
A.A. Wrong. Yeah, so A.A. Wrong said, why don't camera companies use the Arca mount? They, like, you know, Sigma. And does Tamron do it?
Well, yeah. So are we talking on the lenses?
On the lens mount.
Or are we talking on the body itself?
Like, on the lens mount.
On the lens.
Yeah. A little collar. The thing that you like.
And I complain about this all the time. It's a great question. Why don't they? I mean, it's just a dovetail cut. It can't be that hard to machine.
It'll make your lenses lighter because there's less mount. Yeah, metal.
But, you know, I mean, yeah, does everybody use Arca mounts? No, but like 95.6% of us do. So, you know, like I've heard that argument on there. Well, not everybody wants it. Like,
you still have to put another shoe on the bottom anyways, right?
Yeah,
if it is different from Arca mount. So it might as well just be an Arca mount because most just gimbal heads are that anyways. Yes.
Yeah. So it drives me crazy when they don't do that. And
you know what? I will put it on my list of questions the next time I talk to an executive. Why are there no dovetail mounts on your lens collars?
And it's Canon, Nikon, and Sony. It's the big three. Because even like OM lenses have the dovetail cut.
Does Fujifilm?
So, yeah.
Fujifilm does. Yeah. On the 200, the Great White Sharp. Okay.
So it's
I don't know if they do on any of their other Super Tellies.
It seems to be really like it's a surprise every single time. It's not like there's any consistency. Yeah. It's very interesting. Mm. Another interesting note, sort of a sidebar on this. I mean, you know, I love my guns. And I actually noticed when I was shopping around and stuff for stuff.
What's that? Our subscriber numbers just, okay.
Oh, what? Went up? No, but Arca mount, it's interesting. Those, it never used to be a thing in the rifle shooting or target shooting field, but now it's huge because they're all using the same tripod head. So even other, what my point is, whether you like it or not, even other industries are now using Arca Swiss mount as a universal mounting system. So we're seeing this coming out on spotting scopes and mounting plates and all this kind of stuff. And I just thought that was really funny because I always thought it was a photographic limited thing. And now it's becoming even more universal than we think. So
I feel like you've told this story before.
I haven't.
To me.
I haven't.
That seems like an off-mic conversation.
But yeah. Not to the world.
All right. Next one is from Nick Hill. They ask, how long were you there trying to get a bird to land on your hand in your 100 to 300 video?
I used my princess powers. These birds are starving.
No.
It has been another cold snap that was unexpected. They came back and they're bummed out.
I have princess powers. I have Disney princess powers. Don't take that away from me, Jordy Boo.
Sorry, what was your princess again? I'm trying to... Oh, you're Rapunzel. Okay.
Rapunzel. You used your Rapunzel powers. Birds love Rapunzel. Yeah. So I just put up my hand like a princess, and then they flock to me because they feel my inherent goodness and warmth and kind nature.
Jordan,
and,
what actually happened?
Hold out your finger for any length of time in that park, they will land. Because they're used to, like, some people will go, we don't approve of this, and feed the birds out in that area. So the birds know that they're going to get food. Don't do that. It's bad. I am not approving that at all. But it was neat when I was filming and a bird landed on my head. And I'm annoyed that we didn't get a photo of that because it was probably very cute.
Yeah.
So you weren't waiting.
I used my prince's powers to have that bird land on his head. You know, they're not trained.
Thanks, babe.
Okay. Next one is from Hourglass Hours, which I kind of like.
Yeah. Why don't mind you calling me babe. I think that's cute. I like it.
Let's just keep going with it.
Why would you shoot almost everything at F4, Chris, on a lens that is an F2.8? How dare you?
Dare I?
Yeah.
How dare I? And especially on a lens that is excellent at f2.8. So to give context, we were testing the new 100 to 300, which is f2.8 Canon L series. I mean, it's an incredibly versatile professional lens, incredibly sharp at 2.8. No reason not to shoot at 2.8, except that I'm the one taking the pictures. And if I want to use a different aperture, I damn well will. So, you know, there's... Like I hate this stuff, and I get it. It's like, look, you know, especially at DP review, we were absolutely shooting a lot of technical tests, and you know, and people are always saying, I won't mention the people because there's lots of people. They're always like, oh, you know, people want to see this at 2.8. They want to see, and like I get that.
That was me.
I get it. Yeah, I get that from a technical standpoint, but from an artistic standpoint, I don't always want to. You know, I'm shooting hockey. I want a little bit more depth of field. I want a little bit more leeway. The light was decent in that Olympic Oval. It's not like an amateur, you know, neighborhood rec center skating rink. I mean, it's got great lighting. So I'm like, I can afford to go to F4, get a little bit more detail, enhance my chances, getting a shot in focus and getting some coverage for extra distance. And so that's a creative choice I make, and I'm allowed to make that. And I don't want to feel like I have to shoot always at the aperture just for technical reasons so that you guys can see the sharpness at 2.8 all the time. And frankly, I did shoot some photos at 2.8. And You had those samples too.
We have flare shots. We have bokeh tests. Yeah. We have Leica tests. Everything that you would want to know how the lens performs at 2.8. Chris did shoot those when he got to the hockey game. Chris likes to see more, like multiple players, a little bit more context. I understand that. You know, am I still the person who's like, we need more wide open shots every time I get something? Absolutely, because I'm an annoying person and Chris has to deal with that.
Absolutely.
But I understand his creative intent in this situation. And I look how angry he's getting, so stop asking.
How do I put this? Like, yeah, I absolutely want to provide a service to everybody who watches our videos. And I think I do. At the same time, as a photographer, I want to shoot photographs. And I think that's fair as well. And so I will make creative decisions. And sometimes I will even make mistakes on things. I'll be like, oh crap, I didn't notice I was still at that ISO. And you know what? I'm human. That's what we all do. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean the photo's no good, right? I mean, I feel like it's important to judge lenses technically. Shut up. It's important to judge lenses on their technical ability, but it's also important to just appreciate photographs.
That's, right? I think, what I want to mention is that you are not given a requirement for how many pictures you have to take. You're not given a requirement on what you have to shoot at. You're just told to go use a camera and enjoy it and give your opinions on it.
And I will tell you, previously, having to shoot like 30 or 40 pictures to really evaluate. I mean, I shoot a lot of photos to evaluate the lens, but having to not just shoot, but show 30 or 40 photos and let people download those raws and have access to that stuff, I get the benefit there. But honestly, from a creative standpoint, it was largely soul crushing because I'm out there shooting and I'm not thinking about the subject matter very much. I'm not thinking about what's interesting me. I'm not going, you know, as a photographer, you walk on the streets, you go with what I want to see next, what I feel like shooting, what I'm inspired to shoot. No, I'm going down thinking like, oh, will this chain link fence be a good Leica test? Like, oh, do we have enough sharpness tests? Have we fully evaluated the flare examples and stuff? And that's honestly, creatively, it's soul crushing. It's not fun to do. So I think there has to be an important balancing act, at least for me to function as a human being, absolutely has to be. And so I feel like I still tried to do that for you guys and we try to evaluate stuff. We have, you know, pulled a little bit back on the technical to also show more about just the creative. And I think that's a better format.
Me too. Okay.
Test charts at 2.8 and F4 and stop down for like,
Jaron, you're going to have to run the limiter a little bit there. Are we recording this 32-bit? Because that might have clipped.
I'm going to let Chris
cool down
a little bit.
Great.
Here's one, Chris. This should make you feel better. This is from Baihu, and they say, I think this is on your SL3 video. I think these may be Chris's best photos of any review so far. There you go. They love your pictures.
I absolutely appreciate that comment, Baihu. I don't necessarily agree with you. But I absolutely appreciate that. I'm glad you enjoyed them. Actually, it's funny. We've been getting a lot of those comments on a lot of our latest videos where it's like, oh, I think this is the best stuff. You know, Jordan gets those too. They're like, oh, I think this is the best frame you've ever shot. And I'm like, I think Jordan shot better frames, but that's still nice to hear. Like,
I think he would agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like the pictures you got in Idaho are actually the best you've taken since I've
known. Those are pretty good. But you know, I really appreciate the nice comments because that does mean a lot. And it certainly means a lot because you're playing to the creative side of what I'm trying to do as opposed to just the technical, which I just went on a rant about. Yeah. So thank you, Baihu.
Bring your heart rate down. Last
Germany
one.
Is very pretty.
Jordan, you're going to answer this one. Chris can sit there and he can breathe for a minute and rock back and forth.
Honestly, the light in Wetzlar wasn't that pretty this time. Yeah, so
looked a little overcast.
You work with what you work with.
On that video, there were more than a couple comments that Chris's lips were blue.
Yes.
And I mean, it did kind of go with the exhausted / like drained.
Oh, yeah. No, that
situation.
That was a creative choice on my part.
No, how are my lips right now?
Why were his lips blue?
Okay, so I could say yes, it was a creative decision to show that Chris had very little oxygen moving through his head, but I decided to shoot that sequence in log because it was very high contrast in the trees there, and this is a brand new camera. I used the existing Leica L log to 709 conversion LUT when I was processing that, which was doing some weird stuff to the magenta. And I went and tried to manually fix that. Jaron caught an example. He's like, hey, his lips look a little blue here. I went and fixed that one clip manually, but there were other ones that I did not see when I was going through there. It was a pretty tight turnaround on that. And I missed it. And it'll be fixed, I'm sure, by the time the camera hits retail. There'll be a production LUT available for you.
Yes.
And you will not have weird blue lips and also any red shirts in that as well. I had to manually rekey and make it a normal color. So this is why you want an official supported LUT. We've run into that other times with like the OM1 when it first came out. The LUT didn't work very well. Nikon Z9. Wait till you have an approved LUT for that. Or maybe just don't shoot a lot of log before a camera is launched, which is a lesson I will take to heart now.
And I do not have low oxygen levels. I do not have a medical condition that is causing my lips to turn blue. Although I do appreciate the comments where people say, hey, I think that you might be dying.
What was happening to his eyes? That is not a result of the grade. Those were visible bags under his eyes because he was not sleeping. Nothing to do with the color.
Yeah, the jet lag was fierce on that one. It was rough.
Okay, that's it. That's the episode. Anyone who has been an astute listener and listens every week will know that we've threatened to have a guest for like two straight weeks. One of them was my mistake because I got scheduling wrong. The other one was we had a scheduling problem.
Change,
so we had to move. So if everything goes as planned, there will be guests in the next couple of weeks.
Three weeks even. We got guest.
Yeah.
Guest.
There will be people who will come in talking about cool stuff. So there's that. So anyway, thanks you all for joining us. We'll
thanks.
Catch you next week.
Thanks, babe.
Thanks, Jared. I want to shoot at F4, I will.